SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and about almost 10 minutes into hour three. Full morning, and we've had two long discussions. Nick Tamaro is going to join us. We'll also get a visit in with Seth. I got to reach Seth Marrow, too. And, in fact, I just saw that Andy mentioning the no scratches out yet. I'm sure there's extensive with all those races coming off the turf today at Saratoga. And, in fact, let me reach for the... The Saratoga action. While we bring Nick Tamaro in, and here we go. Here's this. Yeah, here's Saratoga. The worst part of this is the with anticipation. The 2-year-old graded opportunity for the juveniles on the grass coming off. So kind of, you know, this is a traditional lead-in toward juvenile Breeders' Cup turf action. Nick, good morning.
Morning, Steve. How you doing?
Excellent. Just mentioning that, and I'm sure you haven't posted yet, so I'm sure you're waiting for the scratches as well, rather than have to go chop everything up. So today's going to be. I think this will be only the second day that everything has come off the turf. Otherwise, we've had. Any other time there's been weather, we've kept some things on. Anything about this card? Is there going to be an off the turf horse that people are going to miss today?
It doesn't appear that way. The interesting horses moving to turf in the turf claimer in the middle of the card were dirt horses. So, I mean, 12th Labor and Castle Casanova will probably get a big look now on the dirt, but they were each interesting as new turf horses. 12th Labor's been on the turf before, but it was for Dallas Stewart. Now he's first off a claim by Mike Maker, so they would have been the two. And the shame of it is that Todd Pletcher must feel like he is just has completely struck out trying to get Win From Within on the turf. And he's dying to get this horse on the turf. He entered him on the turf on Four Star Dave Day, and they rained off the turf. And then he entered him on Sunday, and he was an AE, and he didn't get in. And then he entered him in here, which I think said quite a bit about what he thinks of this horse. And, again, I doubt he'll run today, but it's been rather unfortunate. So, no, I mean, you know, the last looks like a race where you could potentially have some value. I don't have a great amount of confidence in really anything. I kind of wanted to bet just in time for wine on the turf on the class drop. So, seems like one of those days that'll give us a bit more of an opportunity during the day to handicap for the weekend, because the weather looks like it's going to get quite a bit better, and this should be the last day of off the turf racing.
Exactly, and we'll finish strong Thursday through Monday, and in the meantime, we've also taken the opportunity with the early draw, the extra days of the Monday draw for the Oaks, and now the draw yesterday for Derby. And before we talk about the Friday card, your initial thoughts about how this post-draw affected any chances potentially, and not that the 17 is an issue for Tis the Law as much as being between two very savvy, experienced Derby reinsmen in Mike Smith and John Velasquez, and then a wild card like Paco Lopez. Seems to me, Nick, that outside quad is going to have a lot of say about how this race unfolds.
Yeah, I mean, look, Manny Franco rides probably 1,000-plus races with the Ortiz brothers, so he's used to getting slammed into out of the gate. But, cha-ching.
Zing!
And, of course, the irony of Johnny Velasquez being on a horse immediately to his outside with the history, specifically with Tis the Law, and, of course, Manny's current agent and Johnny's former one, it is sort of, it is ironic. It does create a bit of a subplot in a race that otherwise, I mean, look, it's still a derby. It's going to be exciting, but it doesn't have some of the, I guess, cachet that you could say that a derby that's run earlier in the year without so much proven form would have. But yeah, it's interesting that the three big guns all drew to the far outside, and I think they all benefited from that. I think Honor AP was the kind of horse that could really be positioned anywhere in the starting gate, and it wouldn't matter terribly much. I will say that, just as another note on this topic, boy, what a difference the 20-stall gate makes. I mean, the looking at some of the overhead images, I think Ed DeRosa had tweeted something yesterday, and there were pictures that went around, but, I mean, no more are you worried about slamming into the fence when you break from the one, and, you know, heck, an argument could be made now that if you have speed and you want to be drawn inside, it's probably not that bad. So, as it worked out, I think the camp for Tis the Law wanted to be outside. He's obviously the kind of horse that switches off really well when he can see daylight, and he likes being outside of horses. But it was just amazing looking at all the different camera angles during the traverse at how smoothly he traveled the entire way. And you kind of got the feeling at about the 3/8 pole that he was going very easy, and Uncle Chuck was starting to be asked. And even though Luis Saez is more of an arm-flapping type of rider, you could tell that Tis the Law was just going 2-1, and he ended up proving that quite clearly. So we'll see. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Authentic ends up breaking in a little bit and maybe tries to intimidate him. And the other question will be in the first couple of furlongs, how much does Manny Franco want to allow Authentic to clear and cross over in front of him? And because ultimately that's probably what he's going to have to do. He'll have to work a little too hard to make Authentic stalk outside of him. And maybe Johnny will be very deliberate in trying to get Authentic over, figuring that he'll get speed from the inside from a horse like King Guillermo, and then maybe they want to be in a stalking position. I don't think that Authentic can win. I don't really think Authentic can win the race, period, but I don't think Authentic can win that race routing, or stalking. I think Tis the Law can win with horses in front of him. That I'll put it to you that way.
Yeah.
That all being said, it, you know, it makes for what could be an interesting run to the first turn, and as they sort themselves out.
Well, we'll get into it tomorrow when we do the Saturday lineup and the Saturday card together. Let's now take a look at Friday, and might as well work backwards, actually, from the feature. And I've pretty much done this card except for races 1, 3, and 4. But I thought Friday looked good. You did have, we will get to some heavyweight matchups, it seems, when you dig into this. We'll go right from the 13th and work backwards, because that turf sprint, which we already know is losing Bound for Nowhere, Wesley Ward is going to Kentucky Downs, gets High Crime in for Darren Miller, and so there still looks like there'll be 14 in there, and kind of a tricky way to end the card.
It is. You sort of, and with Bound for Nowhere and High Crime, you trade out probably a bit more quality speed for just raw speed, and I think that bodes well for horses that want to come from off of it, and I think Extravagant Kid is the horse to beat in here. I think it's very difficult to take any kind of stand, but I did feel as if Extravagant Kid was disadvantaged by breaking from the rail in the Shakertown, and he ended up having to go a little bit wide, and it's just tough to pass that many horses going 5.5. I thought he ran well, all things considered. I think that Churchill's generally been where he's been at his best, so I'm expecting him to run pretty well. I thought there were some legitimate alternatives. I think there are some that are going to be prices that you could consider as well. Caratari was very good in winning at Ellis in the turf sprint preview that, of course, was a preview for the Kentucky Downs stake next week, but he surfaces here, probably a horse that's better at 5.5 and shorter, and I think he deserves plenty of consideration. He definitely ran better the last time than he did the time before when he was wired by Well Abled, who of course looks like the inside speed here. You know, one thing I'll say about the horse that ran second to Well Abled when all these horses met up in late June is just Might was a little rushed into what went on early in the Shakertown, and he ended up losing all chance around the quarter pole. He's a horse that's going to be a pretty big price that I think deserves some consideration. He's run some good races. The concern, of course, is that he's done so when he's made the lead, and he probably won't make the lead, but this is a barn that's done very well with turf sprinters at big prices, and I think you could do a lot worse than to throw him in some of the multi-race plays at what should be a really juicy number.
Well, and I am glad you brought up Caratari, and I also thought, I've got to look in two places here. I also thought that if you wanted a real price flyer, that Chaps had a bit of a turn to that. Here we go on the outside. With Corey Lannery, Chaps, this is, you know, this is a reach a little bit, but I thought that that he's got, you know, kind of the style that's going to play well and has run races that are within reach here. And Eddie Keneally, you know, certainly knows how to win turf sprints, by the way. I mean, if you're looking from that angle, Lannery gets back aboard, and I know he's on the tickets. And you know who's funny in here is that Sean Davis runs Chief Cicatrice, who seems like he enters in every single sprint throughout a segment of the country, and has been working at Canterbury, working up a storm, actually. And, you know, you mentioned well-abled. Why isn't Chief Cicatrice, you know, worth inclusion?
Yeah, he doesn't like to miss many dances, no question about that. But he's a quality horse, and one that seems to certainly doesn't have to bring his racetrack with him. But it just goes to show you. I mean, the contention runs so deep in this race, and you really can go a number of different directions. Chaps, of course, is kin to Scabbard, who we've been squawking about for quite some time, needing to be a horse that needs to cut back. And this is a horse, of course, that has been at his best when he's cut back in distance. So it actually makes quite a bit of sense. I think there was one other horse I wanted to throw out there, and I liked Real News a lot in the Shakertown. He didn't seem to have much of an excuse that day. He actually had a pretty nice trip, and when you compare him to a horse like Just Might, who had some significant trouble, Real News really didn't. But he's a new gelding showing up for this, and that might have been something that needed to happen. So he's one that I'm not going to give up on. I think he's a horse that still has a lot of talent. Going back to the race he ran at Sam Houston on Ladies Classic Day, he's a horse that I think is capable of running a big one, and I think the 5.5 really is ideal. So he's one I think I'll include as well at a big price.
Nice. Make sure, and you're going to have places where you can tiptoe in this sequence. It feels like you do want to use as many as you can afford in this nightcap kind of a scramble. Let's talk about the Friday's feature and this Kentucky Oaks fairly heavyweight matchup on the top end with Swiss Skydiver, Gamine, Speech is lurking, and the horse that seems to have some mojo Joe going is She Dares the Devil.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of chatter on She Dares the Devil, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for Brad Cox, but I mean, this horse has to run a lot better to contend with these horses. And this is an Oaks unlike any we've ever seen before, of course, literally and figuratively, given the time of year that it's being run. But, I mean, you're talking about, there are three horses in this race that would be heavy favorites in almost every Oaks. Gamine is going to be a heavy favorite. Speech would be in most years, and so would Swiss Skydiver. So I think that She Dares the Devil, this is another one of those visually impressive kind of things based on the race she ran in Indiana, but I mean, she's got a big gap to bridge between her and Swiss Skydiver going back to early May. I don't love to make that comparison, but she's got her work cut out for her. I think she's in the second tier. Look, I think the winner will come from the big three. I'd be very surprised if anybody but one of them wins. Ultimately, I think it's going to come down to Speech and Gamine. I think things are going to start to catch up to Swiss Skydiver pretty soon, and I feel like going the mile and a quarter and having this just incredibly busy schedule, especially by modern standards, is something that's really tough to withstand. So I'm a little concerned that breaking inside, this might be the day where things don't go terribly ideally, and that could be her undoing. I like Speech. I think Speech is a very, very nice horse. I think that Mike McCarthy has shown he's got a tremendous sense of which horses to put on the traveling team. And I thought her second at Oaklawn, you know, figure makers coming out of that race were sort of thrown as to how what to do because it came up so fast and there were so many races to compare it to on that card, most of which featured older horses or males. And you looked at that final time and it was like, geez, I mean, this thing really looks fast. And as it turns out, it was fast. You know, it was a matchup between two really high-quality fillies, and I know at least as, in terms of buyer speed figures, it was assigned a fast number. Gamine has done nothing but validate it, and so too his speech with the big win in the Ashlands. And I think she has a bit of an edge coming in off with a little bit more time, and I think she'll certainly bridge the gap between she and Swiss Skydiver that we saw at Santa Anita and the Santa Anita Oaks, and might end up being one of those horses that just excels with being in a slightly different, not quite as deep a racetrack. Churchill, obviously, a quick surface, and I remember Mike McCarthy talked a lot about that after the win by City of Light in the Breeders' Cup, and I think he's got he spent a lot of time at Churchill Downs working for Todd Pletcher. I think he's got a real keen sense of which kind of horses are going to get over that surface well. She's been there long enough to work, so I like Speech. I'm gonna use Speech and Gamine. I'll use Swiss Skydiver as a backup. I don't think I need much more than that, and that'll give us some flexibility into that big, wide-open turf sprint.
I like it. And to give you an idea, I've already referenced this week leading in just off of the probables, but now with the entries all set, just to give you an idea, McCarthy with the Oaks contender in Speech with Javier, and then on Saturday he's got Smooth Like Straight in the American Turf. He's got Rushy in the Pat Day Mile and CC in the Distaff, in the old Humana, now the Derby City Distaff. So McCarthy poised for potentially a big couple of days at the Downs. Let's press backwards and continue. The 11th brings us the La Troyenne, and in this race, which used to be the 7/8 and then came back as the mile and an eighth. I was tempted. I've been tempted to say it brings Vexatious back for a rematch against Monomoy Girl. Well, not exactly. The rematch would have been with Midnight Bizou. That'll have to wait. But it does feel like this is sort of like a round robin competition, it's like a tag team wrestling match.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of bad opinions generated by this race, based on how Vexatious runs. And I think Vexatious is going to be held up as the litmus test for Monomoy Girl and Midnight Bizou, who, quite honestly, I don't really think we can make a determination about until they actually get in the gate together. So Vexatious, you'd really want to give her an excuse for taking any kind of step backwards, potentially, based on the huge race that she just ran last month. But one thing you'll say about Jack Sisterson is that his horses run frequently, and they seem to perform every time. So he's doing a tremendous job, and he's obviously not going to miss an opportunity to run into Grade One with this really high quality mare. Monomoy Girl's the horse to beat. You know, you'd expect them to be taking the kind of schedule they have, which was to give her a little bit more time off that ruffian. Sure would have been nice to see her come back potentially in the personal ensign, but it's a home game, obviously, being in the La Troyenne. She drew perfectly on the outside. The main speed is immediately to her inside. She should be sitting just off of Lady Kate from the start, and I'm expecting her to win. You know, I think her comeback was a little underwhelming. We didn't know exactly what to expect that day. She took a huge step forward in the ruffian, and obviously that big figure was validated by Vexatious' performance at Saratoga, and now it seems like we're dealing with the Monomoy Girl of old, and I think it really did. It was fun, and it's been enjoyable to hearken back to 2018 and start to appreciate again just how consistent she was. She wasn't brilliant by any means, but she was remarkably consistent. She showed up every time. She, you know, three-year-old fillies that are running buyer figures in the high 90s, low 100s, that's high quality. So it's nice to have her back. I'm expecting her to win. I think she's a Julie will run better. I don't know what happened at Monmouth. And I think you kind of have to get your hands on any workout reports or any kind of information that may be indicating that things have turned around. But I don't think that Steve Asmussen would press on with her if there was still something lingering. And as far as Vexatious goes, you know, with all due respect to Tyler Gaffalione, I thought that I hope that he tries to emulate the work done by Jose Lascano last time, who was very aggressive with her and really cajoled her along early to make sure she stayed close. That, of course, gave her the edge on Midnight Bizou, who's more of a late-running type. Monomoy Girl has significant more tactical speed, so it'll be it'll be interesting to see what happens in the first couple of furlongs. I don't see anybody winning outside of that. Horologist is a nice horse, but she sure looks like a Monmouth horse for course now. I know that was a big effort in the Molly Pitcher, but it certainly looks as if she's at her best in Oceanport.
Well, our super freak kind of backed up the form a little bit with her effort the other day.
Yeah, she didn't run poorly at all. I mean, you're right. Latruska is truly the super freak based on the pace that she set and hung on. But yeah, you're right. I mean, she didn't run poorly. And I think there's opportunity. Horologist also had some things happen in some of her starts for Baltus. She had a horrible trip in the Apple Blossom, and she actually didn't run badly at Laurel. So there are some excuses that could be made. She's more of a second-tier type. And if you're going to look at this pick five and say, you know, I'm only going to be too deep in terms of A's in the Oaks, and you know, we're going to talk about the race for older males, the Ali Sheba, in a minute, and that's not one where you probably have to be terribly wide either, then you have the opportunity, I think, to use Horologist as a backup.
The Ali Sheba, as mentioned, and we talked to Gary Young yesterday, and I specifically wanted to ask him about McKenzie after, you know, the sort of just inexplicably bad effort in the Metropolitan has come back and worked well, and Gary said he expects an A performance, and that may be necessary, because by my standards, who, you know, some people seem to shrug off a little bit as you know, kind of ordinary, all he's done is just bang out good effort after good effort, and he's Tom's de Tott an improbable away from having won, you know, four straight graded stakes.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, by my standards, is in big trouble. I've been nothing but a detractor, and I'm on him. I'm a believer now.
Now you're believe. Now
I'm in.
Believe.
I'm in. Now, they
be
all
a
come
man,
around,
Nick.
Right?
Be a man.
They all come around. You know, and I think what made me like him more is that he finally had things go against him in the Foster, and I actually thought he ran very well. And he was a horse who had some cozy trips coming into that. He had stalked slow paces, sitting perfectly outside, and ultimately had just sort of done what he was supposed to do. But I thought he ran well in the Whitney, and I know he didn't get he didn't have really a straw in his path that day, but still fared well. And you know, it feels, Steve, like he's going to get his by my standards type of trip. He's just going to be stalking outside. I think that they'll ride Mr. Freeze with intent, and he'll go to the lead, and I think he'll be latched on to his outside. And if Bodie Express is getting given a more aggressive ride than he was in the Alley Darb, sort of an embarrassing ride by Javier Castellano that day, who seems like there's been a few times at Saratoga where he's just completely removed the speed from his horses, which is always brilliant in racing on any surface. If Bodie Express doesn't show speed, then, and even if he does, by my standards, is going to be set up 2 to 3 wide outside of one of these pace types, and I think things are going to go very, very well for him. I don't know how to handle McKenzie. I'll say this. I mean, look back through the subsequent form of the horses in the Metropolitan Mile. This was an exceptionally weak Metropolitan Mile, and I think we thought going into it like it was a star-studded bunch, and there were a lot of big names in it, and there were horses that were very accomplished, but they've all underperformed since from the top down, including Code of Honor, including Warrior's Charge. There were also Rands that also endorsed ran poorly in his next start. So I think it was a bit of a dud, top to bottom. And I don't know what to do with McKenzie. I hate the conversation about having run him at 6 furlongs. To me, it just seems like Baffert's trying to figure out what he has left. With that said, I mean, he ran an excellent race over the surface last year, beating a good field, and that was when he was at his absolute best. So what we know is that the good McKenzie wins this race pretty handily. We just don't know if the good McKenzie exists anymore.
We got a couple of other horses where you have to take a kind of a referendum, and one of them is Mr. Freeze, who looked at a certain point like he was, you know, going to have a very special year as a 5-year-old, and that didn't, you know, that hasn't materialized and kind of went sideways, including the Met effort. And then there's Hentz, who jumps in at the quarter pole and who is working up a storm at Keeneland that is eye-popping. And I kept looking here, you know, trying to figure out who is the price to tinker with. And it, for me, it may be Hentz. Sisterson has just been, you know, too good, with acquisitions, you know, any of these Calumet horses that have come his way. He's resurrected several of them.
Yeah, I know. I agree. He's actually done quite well. I mean, hell, he got a grade one placing at a True Timber. So that was, I think, an accomplishment in itself. Title Ready's my price horse. I think that can get a piece of this. And I thought he had, I actually bet the horse that finished second to him last time. And I thought that he ran very well to run him down. I don't know if he's capable of much more than third, maybe second in an ideal circumstance where perhaps the pace gets a little quicker than I think it's going to be. But he's that sort of one-run progressive type that I think can just keep on going. I think it would be unfair to Owendale to talk about the race and not at least mention him. I thought the blame was very telling for a variety of reasons, one of which is that I think that might be Owendale's trip. Is the one-turn mile. And the one-turn mile with a big pace is an ideal setup for a closer of any type. Closers that want to go a mile and a quarter, closers that want to go 7 furlongs. You give them a big pace at a mile at a place like Churchill that runs like a long sprint, then they're gonna get the trip. And he had nothing go his way in the Foster. He's been given a little bit of time since. He's the type that if you feel like you've got good opinions in the races around it, you don't want to be beaten in the pick five by him. But he's going to have to run just a little bit better. I just felt like it was probably a little unfair to talk about the race and not at least reference him a bit.
Well, and in that blame was one of the other Sisterson resurrection cases, Everfast. So
the one and only Everfast, who, yeah, came to Sisterson eligible for a one other then and ended up in the forego.
Let's talk about the Edgewood, and there's very little to focus on besides the return to North America of Sharing. Acquitted herself really well in the coronation, and this race goes through her every which way.
Yeah, there was some chatter about running her in the Del Mar Oaks, and she's landed here. I guess that the plan in terms of getting her a grade one as a three-year-old is probably to target the QE2 at Keeneland, which seems like the right move. Yeah. This is a horse with a tremendous amount of talent, and I don't think you want to go start chasing races now. There's so many races for four-year-old fillies and up with big names, big grades, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, she just seems to be the horse to beat. I think Hendy Woods is a horse that always looked to have potential. I thought her maiden win at Fairgrounds back in March was very good. There were some things that worked against her in the regret, and she put it all together in the Indiana Grand and ran a race that, by any measurable speed figure, really makes her competitive unless Sharing shows up with a big step forward. I think that people are going to probably misunderstand Walkin' Marrakesh a little bit and say that Enola Gay's poor performance at Saratoga is a little bit of a strike against her. I don't think it is. I thought she actually ran very, very well in the Appalachian. That was a relatively hot pace for the level, and I thought she moved I don't think Jose Ortiz did anything wrong whatsoever. I thought she moved aggressively to make sure that she didn't lose track of Alms, and she ultimately outfinished Alms while Enola Gay tagged them late on the wire, and so I think Walkin' Marrakesh is a dangerous horse and is one that you'd probably want to partner up in the exacta with Sharing or potentially use, I think, in some of the multi-race plays as a potential upsetter. She had no chance against Sharing two back when she was blocked for three-quarters of the stretch run. So I liked her that day. I actually used her as my only other A besides Sharing. And so I think if you thought she had a chance that day, then you want to go ahead and take a chance against Sharing again off the ship-in and the layoff, et cetera, et cetera.
I'm pretty much on the same page, but Sharing very, very much a heavy lean. Let's get to the eight bells, and this starts the stakes sequence that goes starts at 3:05 on Friday and goes through the 13th. This pits essentially the bookends here, the two fillies in Monday Call and Four Graces that could actually end up finding themselves fairly quickly on the backstretch, shoulder to shoulder. And I don't know if that sets it up necessarily for somebody to come marauding, maybe Sconson, but how do you look at this?
I'll tell you, what a race. I mean, this thing really, really came together. There's a lot of good sprinting fillies out there. I think ultimately Gamina is going to be more of a one-turn type, and if all of them get in the gate frequently as four-year-olds, we're going to have some really nice races like the Madison and the Humana Distaff next year. Monday Call is a horse that went to the lead last time because the other speed blew the brake, and she ended up setting, all things considered, a relatively moderate pace, at least according to Timeform US, and went on with it nicely, but she was very impressive in victory. It's both of them are capable of letting the other one go and stalking. I think that Four Graces won out at the post position draw. So I think that's what will ultimately determine what happens early. And I don't expect Bejarano to go on a suicide mission with Perfect Happiness, who's also very, very fast. And so you'll probably have them virtually lined up going down the backstretch, the 1, 6, and 7. And Four Graces is definitely going to be in the most advantageous spot in terms of that. And I thought her Beaumont was sensational. was up and on a pace that you felt like could really fall apart, and she ended up just going on with it. And I think Ian Wilkes probably considered the test and decided that he'd give her a little bit more time with this as a target. And I think she's the horse to beat. I want to see it one more time from Monday call, but no chance I'd take a stand one against the other. I think you absolutely have to use both. And I think the in terms of what you're referencing for horses that could come from off of it, Sconson is the one that you want. Probably mm-hmm. always going to be a little bit better at Churchill. And James Graham didn't have much of a choice, but boy, she was practically in Louisville around the far turn in that race at Ellis. She had to go very, very wide to try and cover the field and make a move. But I think she's the kind of horse, at least based on what we've seen from her at Churchill, she's capable of making some noise.
Well, an already graded stake placed, which counts for something here. And then everybody else, Vicky Oliver with the maiden winner, Phil Bauer with Mr. Rigney's Perfectly Clear, who looks like there might be some quality to her, but this is a big ask. It did really feel like Sconson was the right filly to come calling late. Nick, terrific way to get the Derby Week opinions off and running. Tomorrow, you and I will convene and go through the Saturday card. And then on Friday, we will bring everybody New York. We'll bring the Saratoga weekend, closing weekend at the Spa. And I really appreciate it, as does everybody. And, of course, Nick's analysis brought to you by Naira Bets. And a big weekend on not just Naira Bets, but, of course, the Churchill and Saratoga coverage on Fox Sports. The America's Day at the Races team, Saratoga Live, and everything else, and all the Churchill action yesterday and coming forward this afternoon as well. Nick, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Sounds great, Steve. Thanks. Good luck.
Nick Tamaro, NTAM, 1215, standing by. Seth Merrow, everybody. And boy, I was looking on Sunday, Seth. I was watching that leaderboard, watching the leaderboard for the Saratoga Sunday contest. And I never saw Seth Merrow.
No, it was, man, that was a tough day. So, although I will say the double that ended with Gandhi Dancing, I had Gandhi Dancing, and I forgot the name of the horse I used in the race before, but it ran fourth. Had I hit that double, I would have wound up in a money position, because I had the double pretty good. So I ran fourth and won the second half of the double. And I had some other plays during the day that would have wound up okay. And, you know, in the stretch, got a little bit of light, but I could not make anything happen on Sunday.
That's all right. That's all right. You're back for one last Sunday contest. And for those that want to participate, you got to register and be registered by 5 o'clock on Saturday. And obviously, with everything going on, you might want to get out ahead of it so that you're part of the last Sunday contest at the Spa. And of course, today, I haven't checked back to see about the scratches, but off the turf. So today's kind of carved up. We'll maybe get a couple of opinions from Seth before we wrap up. We do have about now. We got about 18 minutes, Seth, so we can get some of your pre-Derby and Oaks weekend thoughts as well. And of course, some of those thoughts, both on track and off the draw, the loss of Art Collector, and then some of the shine off of Team Tiz with yesterday's circumstances involving Barkley.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's shaping up to be a fun. I said during the handicapper support this morning on TV that, you know, kind of soak it in, because I would assume and certainly hope this is a once in a lifetime experience where the Derby and the Oaks overlap with closing weekend at Saratoga. But, you know, normally you get to this last week at Saratoga and it's kind of melancholy. The locals, we all like it because the weather's still good, the racing's still good, the crowds let down a little bit. Well, this year, no crowds to begin with. And so the letdown, you would think, would be more. But no, I mean, this year with the overlap of the Derby and the Oaks, and given the performers that stand out there, and they stand out partly because of performances up here at Saratoga, I think it just has a fun feel to the whole weekend coming into Derby, Oaks, and, you know, closing weekend at Saratoga, where you may have mentioned it already, but there will be some early post times over the last few days, starting on Friday up here 12:20 Saturday. And I'm talking Saratoga post times, 11:45 on Saturday, 12:45 both Sunday and Monday. So folks should be aware of that a little bit earlier here over the closing weekend, Friday to Monday here at Saratoga. Obviously, early post times Friday and Saturday down at Churchill for Oaks and Derby Day. But, you know, after the draw, Tis the Law gets 17 and 17 of 18. I think that's going to be a good spot, you know, with the new gate, doesn't get stuck out, you know, in that auxiliary gate with the open space between the two gates. Now with the 20-horse gate, and the folks may have had a chance to see it yesterday as they kind of gave it a test drive before the second race yesterday in a mile-and-a-quarter race. But I think he's going to be in a good spot. Now, it just, to me, just seems like he just comes into it in such good form. The form's held up. He looked so good at a mile-and-a-quarter last night. Folks may focus on, if they're taking a shot, his defeat at Churchill. But, again, I don't think that was a negative via the Churchill strip. I just think first time around, two turns, sloppy tracks, some traffic. I kind of draw a line through that one, particularly given what he has done since and at different tracks. So I think he comes in and just has a real edge on this bunch. Art Collector was going to be a horse that obviously was going to take a lot of attention as an alternative. So it's unfortunate that, you know, he went to the sidelines. Honore P now will be in the mix there, Authentic in the mix also. I just think Tis the Law has the edge. Now, if folks are with me and that you're then looking to kind of find something underneath to fool around with, Honore P and Authentic are obviously the logicals. But 1,000 Words, Baffert said, once he got away from Los Al and got to Del Mar, he's just been doing much better. So he's a little bit interesting. I thought Sol Volante, to me, draw a line through the Belmont Stakes. He could bounce back. Dallas Stewart, I don't know whether I'm super thrilled with Winning Impression, but Dallas Stewart has certainly been a guy you'd have to watch at the Derby for horses that come in underneath at big prices. King Guillermo would be one I just couldn't pull the trigger on. The layoff is just too long for me. He's working well from what I understand, but I just, oof, that layoff, that seems like too much to overcome. So we'll see. The one that as I said, probably play around with a little bit, the 2,000 Words and Sol Volante maybe has some value underneath this law. And on Friday, I'm not sure. I'm unlikely to bet the race. This is more one I just want to sit back and watch. But I do want to watch because I've said it a few times over the past few weeks. You just don't see that this often in this day and age of a division with a couple of players that put in super performances to elevate themselves to kind of even on the top level of the division. And three-year-old Phillies Gamin coming out of the test, and Swiss Skydiver impressive in the Alabama. And then 3 weeks, 4 weeks later, they face off to kind of settle it on the track. So, and Speech, who is going to be interesting as an alternative, but I'm really looking forward to the Oaks on Friday just to see the showdown between the two horses coming out of the really impressive performances up here.
The opportunity, and I'm going to pull these up. I've got to print these tonight. Now that I'm thinking of it, so that I've got them for Saturday. I always have the future wager numbers in my binder. The Oaks Derby double included. You know, the future. There's two of them this year. The first time that's happened, obviously. And usually you're an Oaks Derby better, but it does feel like unless you're betting $200 doubles, you're dealing with rather mundane pairings. What are you doing? Swiss Skydiver, Tis the Law. That's your Oaks Derby double. How do you, some of the starch has come out of that. I suppose folding in the Oaks Turf Classic Derby Pick 3 could get fun. There's a 10-horse field in that Wood. I keep calling it the Woodford, but it's not the Woodford anymore. I think it's the old Forster. And maybe there's a little value to kick up the old double by playing the Turf Classic Pick 3.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I don't know whether that would for me, if I was going to play around in those types of pools, Pick 3 doubles, I would put aside just a little bit and come up with like some clever idea for an upset and hope that there is some kind of an upset, which balloons those up, I would think, tremendously with those two races. But like I say, you said it, the short price is expected. So if I was playing around in that double of the pick three pool, I'd probably, as I say, just set a little money aside, maybe put a couple of clever ideas in there in case things fall apart.
And, you know, the one thing that I really have not yet done is give everybody a feel for Saturday, the draw yesterday beside Derby. The action on Saturday, 2:55, starts the stakes sequence, and there is a stakes pick four that there's a pair of them, but the pick four that starts in the eighth with the American Turf, that's the three-year-old boys with the likes of Field Pass from Maker. Maker is just dots this entire couple of days. You've got Smooth Like Straight from Michael McCarthy, who I've brought up, Fancy Liquor from Maker as well. Then you move to the Pat Day Mile, which ended up with nine horses, including Echo Town coming off of the Jerkins. Cezanne ends up, Baffert ends up going ahead with Cezanne shipping into Churchill. How about Tap It to Win out of the very good turn back try, and maybe Mrs. Weber can pair up major stake wins with the win Forgo victory, and here's Tap It to Win trying the Pat Day Mile. No Parole, you know where he's going to be for Amos. Rushy ends up in there, of course, as had been indicated earlier in the week. The Iroquois, the first kind of a unique situation on Derby Day to have next year's prospective Derby horses. They're going to run in the Iroquois, goes as the 10th. The 11th is the Distaff Turf Mile. Always a good bellwether, and you got the likes of Newspaper of Record being the odds-on favorite in there, Juliet Foxtrot, Beau Recall, La Signore, and Daddy is a Legend. Not a big field, but a good field. Then the Derby City Distaff, the old Humana. This is the fillies and mares going 7/8, and you've got Serengeti Empress. You'll know where she'll be. Bellafina and CC, they all line up shoulder to shoulder, but Romans has got Sally's Curlin. There's some things going on here. Bell's the One for Neil Pessin. Mia Mischief down inside. And then that Turf Classic that I mentioned. You've got 3-1 favorite factor This inside. Rock Emperor for Chad, who also sends Digital Age and Sacred Life. Mr. Dumas for Maker. Maker's also got Some Like It Hot Brown. There's quite a bit of pace in this, actually. There's maybe three pace horses. Jimmy Baker's got Spectacular Gem, so there's more pace. Good edition of the Old Forester Turf Classic, and then the 146th Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, you mentioned the Iroquois, and that's kind of interesting because, as you said, normally where the Derby is, you have two-year-old races that Derby weekend, but they're the kind of horses that are just a little ahead of the class, a little precocious, and normally by the next year's Derby, they don't roll around to be players. But with the Iroquois this year, being on Derby weekend, I think there's the potential there. Because I've said now for a couple of seasons, I think the September meet and then a little bit later, the fall meets at Churchill, the two-year-old races, I think, are very salty and tend to be kind of productive with some horses that will make maybe a little bit of noise on the three-year-old scene. So that'll add a little intrigue to the weekend as well.
Well, and Seth, let's also set the stage for today's draw, the last Saturday card at Saratoga. And let me reach for my Saratoga stuff. The meet, and obviously next week, Sunday will be you and I'll, I'll join you for Loose on the Lead on my way back from Louisville, but a big weekend is in the offing, and that includes the two-year-olds as well, with the hopeful and the spinaway, and really quite a bit more. I mean, it's the kind of crazy what we're going to have to deal with Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah, I think I've heard, 11, 12, 11, 11 over the weekend as far as number of races. So, and there was a kind of a lull, maybe a week and a half or so ago, where there were a couple of cards where you thought, oh, how are things going to play out here over the end of the meet? But then I think when it was announced that the Belmont meet's going to have a little bit of a delayed open, that may have helped things, because I think over the last few days, I think field size overall has been pretty good. There have been a couple of races with smaller fields, and obviously today with the off-the-turf situation. Yeah, but I think the last weekend, I think people will have a lot of fun up here.
Well, and for those looking at what we're talking about, the Glens Falls, the Jim Dandy, the Prioress, and the Woodward on Saturday, and then on Sunday we come back with the Honorable Miss, the Lucky Coin, and the Spinaway, and then closing day, Labor Day Monday, and the Lure and the Hopeful closes things out. And, of course, Del Mar will be doing the same kind of things, and Labor Day Monday is also first day of the Kentucky Downs card season, so it's going to be absolutely crazy. Seth, how about some opinions for today at the Soggy Spa?
Well, I just pulled up the scratches. They took a while to come out. I'm just kind of looking, see what I have, because the intriguing races today were more the third race. It's going to be interesting to see what Nashville does. I mean, it's scratched down to a field of four now. Searing Chase, the one horse, is out. But Nashville, the firster from Ashby's, I'm not telling anybody anything exciting here betting-wise. This is just one of those that may be interesting to watch. It's been working well by Spikestown. A little bit of a belated debut. They bought the horse as a yearling in September of 2018 at Keeneland. So, a three-year-old debut in September, it's a little bit late. But Matt Nashville maybe won at least in the third race to kind of take an extra look at. Fifth race, I was going to toss out Golconda as being a little bit interesting at a price, but I'm just looking at Golconda as scratch. So now I'm 5-2-1 in the fifth race. Brunet, who I had last time for Jim Bond, right. You and I had him on early in the meet when we kind of realized he was getting off to a nice start, and it's continued. But I was on him last time. He ran second, and he's, it's one of those horses where maybe a little camera shy, but when they fire the right numbers and you take a look at the rest of the field, eventually they seem to find a field that maybe they can kind of get through, and that might be the case this afternoon for Brunet. So, again, I'll use that one in the fifth. As I say, the price I was looking at got kind of scratched out of there. So, I don't know. You have any races that are intriguing to you?
I did not look really at Saratoga, and the only thing that I had printed out was the stake, just because it invariably it's important with anticipation, and now it's I mean, how many even stayed in?
Well, I'm just looking in the eighth. In the ninth, they lost American Monarch and Nathan Detroit are out, so scratched down to a field of four.
Yeah, so it doesn't matter. What the eighth, actually, probably worth looking at. Because the eighth was a mile and an eighth. The speed, it's funny. The other day there was a race where I think it was the Philly. Was it the Phillies and Mares going the mile and the eighth? And it was, looked to me like there would be real pace and the opportunity for somebody to close. And of course, nothing of the sort materialized. And Nick Tamro actually tweeted something where he said, no matter what happens, no matter what it looks like in these 9-furlong races at Saratoga, they never fall apart, essentially. And certainly with a wet track, and don't know how much more rain you might expect. I can tell you it rained here. It was raining here, cats and dogs, this morning. And if it's the tail end of that weather, who knows? You might be in for more. But I think you're looking for some pace, for somebody to be on or right near in this. And this field looks like it held. Did it held together? How many you got in there? No, that's a small field.
Yeah, it is completely held together. No scratches at this point in the eighth. And, just an update from, obviously, our TV sets on the backstretch. When I got here this morning for the handicapper support, 8:45 or so, it was pouring. And it has kind of been off and on since then. It came down pretty good until maybe a little after 9, then it let up, and now it's just kind of off and on with a sprinkle, and then it stops for a little while with a sprinkle, but it was coming down when I got here pretty good. But I had it 3, 4, 5, and 2 in the 8th with control group on top. But I will say, for me, it was kind of a coin flip, and if the morning line holds up, Evaluator just becomes very interesting for Jim Bond. A little turf to dirt move. There's some okay dirt form underneath. So I put control group on top, but I think Evaluator is interesting. And as I say, the spread on the morning line is 7-5 versus 6-1. If that does hold up, Evaluator becomes interesting to me in that
age. The way the Noda team seems to be churning out performances. This horse looking for a third win at Saratoga, which I think would make him the first this year to do it, right? There's nobody else who's won three races.
Not that I know of. I think you're right.
Seth, good luck this weekend. I will talk to you Sunday morning from the road for Derby Oaks weekend recap.
Looking forward to it. A little boots on the ground recap for the Derby on your way back. So we'll do that Sunday morning. Good luck to everybody today.
The parakeet in the cage. Here I am. Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow, too, on your Twitter. And Seth's analysis. Seth's had a very good Saratoga. You should be picking off of his opinions. And opinions from Nick Tamaro for Friday. Glad we got that done. Steve Haskin. Steve, I think Steve picked what, 13 of the 18? Steve's going to have a 13-horse box in the Derby. I'm kidding. We kid because we love. And, of course, Sid, Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale. Back with you tomorrow for the Thursday edition. Darren Rogers at some point will show up. Marty McGee tomorrow, too, and probably some more from the DRF team. The correspondents around the country will get their Derby analysis. Good luck on your plane today, everybody. Talk to you tomorrow from...
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. Consider Bleeder Shield. The leading all-natural paste used to greatly reduce or eliminate EIPH. The list of trainers who trust Bleeder Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.